Oscott wary. Nail in the head shrugged. There's someone out there. We're best off doing a detour. Ross looked in front of him. The steppe was lined with another strip of perfectly ordinarily looking woodland about a mile and a half away. In the distance lay some hills. Judging by the dark green color of the vegetation, they were covered in pines, and he had seen plenty of pine forests at the beginning of his career as a player. That was where familiar lands began. He even had a map, and he had paid to make it as detailed as possible, so that's where he'd been heading. But those two declined the straight path for some reason. I don't see anyone.
Neither do I, said Nail in the Head, eager to agree.
In that case, why did we head back if you saw nothing?
Well, I somehow know we shouldn't go there. We'll run into players. As I said, a detour is our best option. There are lots of real bad folks here. Why should we die? I don't see any reason why we should, and you don't want to die either. So let's get away from here.
So, he couldn't see anything, but he still had some information. Why didn't they pull the other one? Did they intend to lead Ross around in circles before he got as bored as them? What was on those weirdos' minds anyway? They both looked good-natured enough, but Ross didn't trust them one bit. He should get away from them. He should run as fast as he could, and he shouldn't dally, lest more of these botched players appear. Multinational corporations never appear out of nowhere, and never disappear without a trace. You could call it the law of thermodynamics as applied to large businesses. Second World was no exception. When the project had been in its formative stages, the founders were faced by the problem of financing. They needed to invest too much. They were short of resources of their own, and they'd either have to curb their appetites considerably, which would ultimately result in loss of revenue, and have a few more important repercussions, or find extra sources of income. Times were hard, and few were ready to invest so much as a dollar into a startup that the experts said would most likely stay afloat right after launch. And if it was a matter of playing on a field with all spheres of influence distributed between known players, and the amount of financing was of the order of launching a Jupiter moon probe, every old cent mattered. But that only concerned areas that had demonstrated no miraculous returns on investments previously. People have been playing games since prehistoric times, even back in the days when they were not, technically, Homo sapiens. This behavior would be easy to understand for anyone who'd ever observed the behavior of animals. In other words, games were important to human beings and could be extremely lucrative in some of their aspects. That included video games, in particular the one that involved online virtual reality immersion. Even before Second World, there were projects that had made a lot of people very wealthy indeed. However, this one left all the others behind in terms of scale, complexity, detail, and a variety of other factors right from the start. It was the best. It differed from all the others. It heralded a new era, that of Second World. Second World was unique. No other game remotely resembled it, nor was any project of comparable scale likely to emerge, for it suited everyone involved on a high enough level just fine, and those people were powerful enough to make sure no competition could survive, not just in the foreseeable future, but for years to come. Their very position dictated an outlook stretching beyond a single day. One would have to plan for decades ahead. They were much like skilled, top-level politicians in that respect. And it wasn't just a matter of enormous profits, although they were important enough, too. It wasn't even the fact that the project managed to attract a large number of users who had never been interested in online gaming previously. The main reason would never be known to the general public.
Only a few people in the whole world were aware of it, and that was a secret that had to be guarded at any cost. Michael Silber, or simply Old Man to those who knew him well enough, wasn't merely one of the people in the know. He was the first one to discover the secret, and also the first to make sure the masses would never find out about it. That was how Second World made such an impressive launch. Silber's capital became the first brick in the corporate edifice. Michael Silber was an old man indeed, a very old one, so old that none of his children, born in and out of wedlock, were alive. The same concerned a few of his grandchildren, and even a couple of his great-grandchildren. At some point, some of the surviving ones decided he'd been alive for way too long and might as well be removed. The unwritten laws of the family implied that he should let the young and the daring have their chance. However, Silber was of a different opinion, and eventually he ended up with hardly any family at all. Some of his more remote relatives simply disappeared. Others fell prey to freak accidents, and others still changed their behavior drastically, or had maintained a low profile from the very start. The old man disinherited absolutely everyone and made sure to record as much in his will. He did something no member of his family had ever done before. He absolutely denied having any obligation to his kin whatsoever. Some people must indeed have the gift of foresight. Once he found out the secret, it prevented him from what might have been long and unnecessary litigation. But he had already been prepared by that point. The secret was endangered quite a few times, but in each case, those were run-of-the-mill dangers typical for the world of the super-rich. Some opponents needed to be destroyed. Others had to be treated with and let in on the secret. The major players that would find out spared no time or effort to keep the secret known to no one else. It was a small and very tight group of initiates. Most of them hated each other's guts, yet had to coexist as guardians of a common secret, nurturing something they would all have to share in the future, something none of the uninitiated could participate in for all the gold in the world. And today, the secret was in danger once again. This was no nosy journalist miraculously discovering something no one had any right to know anything about, nor was it an Asian tycoon whose personal intelligence service had discovered something so intriguing he would commit any crime to become one of those in the know. Or perhaps the only one. Those threats were common, and the methods of handling them had been devised a long time ago, covering every detail. This time, the blow came from a completely unexpected direction. There was no precedent and no warning, none whatsoever. The reason was that such secrets could never be found on the World Wide Web. They had no life of their own within silicon boards cut from crystals and never crossed any oceans via optical cables or wires. Actually, no such secrets ever existed. But there were never any projects to resemble Second World. Both were unique, and the secret was necessarily an integral part of the only true gaming universe to ever exist. And there was something rotten in this universe. Someone kept dealing them one blow after another, never leaving the secret alone. Thus, it still remained beyond their reach, which meant there could be no hope of reaping the bounteous benefits of projects launched a long time ago. Eric Coleman was the president's homeland security advisor. He was also one of those aware of the secret. He, too, was hoping to get his rightful share. It would be necessary someday, after all. He sat unblinking before the old man's ergonomic bed, watching him take a leisurely sip from some opaque tube connected to one of the medical appliances occupying nearly half the room, a large one, too. The old man didn't look good at all, and it wasn't a matter of age. He was way overdue. There was a saying about the likes of him that the Reaper went about searching for them with a flashlight. Only it wouldn't be a damn flashlight in this case. The Reaper has been searching for the old man with a high-powered floodlight for years. His body had withered long ago. The difference between the old man and a 1,000-year-old mummy would become purely academic very shortly. He was like a wax figure, and it was truly hard to tell how he still managed to retain the spark of life. That body was too chilly a place for any spark. The old man was dying, but that's been his occupation for decades, and so far the Reaper had repeatedly failed to find him. But it only took a single look to realize that their rendezvous might take place any moment now. No matter how powerful a man, no one could ever keep escaping the inescapable forever. However, the old man had a few plans in this respect, and Coleman had to admit that this living mummy had been the first one to so much as conceive of anything like that. The old man set the tube aside and smacked his lips, unnaturally red. They wouldn't look out of place on a dyed-in-the-wool vampire, and asked,
"There's no chance of a mistake, is there?"
Coleman shook his head.
"The people we sent to the hospital make no mistakes, ever."
"Everybody makes mistakes.
Those guys never do. Rostovtsev isn't there."
"For how long has he been away?"
"We know nothing for certain so far. His capsule turned out to contain an imitator device, providing data to monitoring equipment. The capsule keeps a patient alive automatically, so no medical personnel need to interfere. The medics can only open it in case something extraordinary happens, and the automated circuits can no longer handle things. But we have checked, and there were no such cases. This means Rostovtsev's body could have disappeared at any time between their routine checks."
"Routine checks?"
"Yeah. They follow a strict schedule for those. You can't leave a body completely unsupervised after all."
"Whoever carried out the observation must have noticed there was a suspicious electronic device instead of a body inside the capsule?"
"I agree.
The hospital authorities set great store by proper procedure. Trust me on that one. It's pretty damn hard to kidnap a comatose patient.
Right now, we cannot even be certain he had been in a coma in the first place. The problem is that a lot of people work at the hospital, and many of them took care of Rostovtsev at one point or another. Thus, we cannot locate a single doctor that would be in charge of him exclusively. The turnover was unnaturally high in his case, which gives one certain suspicions. Surely enough, one of the staff members is perfectly aware of the circumstances of his disappearance from the capsule, or, perhaps, of the fact that he had never entered it in the first place. But we won't be able to trace them that easily or quickly if they fail to advertise themselves in any way."
"But eventually you'll identify them?"
"Of course. We're already taking measures. We're compiling a list of those responsible for Rostovtsev and those who might be under suspicion, checking their recent expenses and preparing for surveillance."
The old man made a barely noticeable dismissive gesture with his hand.
"I see it as a waste of resources. One of the hospital staff must have been bribed. Even if you find out absolutely everything they know and turn them inside out, there won't be anything original. People are corrupt and will do anything for money. That's all we're likely to learn."
and it won't be any news to any of us. It is Rostovtsev that we need, and not the greedy medic. I'm not sure the culprit can actually help us in any way.
I agree. But we have to start somewhere, after all. We have no other leads so far, after all. We have no idea where Rostovtsev might be at the moment. He might be among the Antipodes right now, or perhaps his body was dissolved in acid, or lies on the bottom of the sea with a lead weight around his neck. There are plenty of places that are deep and quiet enough.
I could name a few people resting there for sure. But does this Rostovtsev participate in the game?
We don't know.
Do you know anything at all?
His character disappeared yet again, but made a huge display of himself before he did, right? He did, as usual.
Say one thing for Rostovtsev. Say he's real good at it. And you didn't manage to get anything done anyway, also as usual.
Unfortunately, it's much harder to bypass the laws of the game than actual laws. We had no access to the area where he revealed himself.
Oh, I know it all. Forget it. Just an old man being grumpy. And there's nothing I can do about it. This damn ticker of mine.
Anything wrong with it?
Do I look like there's anything right with it? Everything's wrong with pretty much every part of me, including the heart. What would you expect after the 8th transplant? They don't tell me such things, but I'm sure some black drug addict was the donor. There's something wrong with this heart. I felt as much at once.
The president will be concerned. He constantly asks about your physical condition.
Your president can dream on about the day he catches a cold at my funeral, and you can tell him as much. Anyway, he can stick his concern right up the ass of the spade they got my latest heart from. Don't remind me of this slug. He was one of my worst investments ever. Ouch! This spade's heart must have decided to do me in completely. The guy was a reverse racist, for sure. He died just in order to get back at me.
You should spend more time in the game. You wouldn't have to bother about such issues there.
Duh. I spend all my waking hours trying to figure out how to transfer not just my private office there, but the entire corporate headquarters as well. It's a no-go so far. Too many hidden saboteurs here. What do you say, Eric? Do you reckon we'll hear of Rostovtsev again?
Coleman nodded with conviction. So far, he's managed to deliver each and every time. He'll definitely make his presence known.
Hell's bells. I'd really like to talk to him. You know, a proper talk. I know a few guys who are virtuosos with pliers and a soldering iron. They're pretty old by now, but they'd be delighted to have another taste of the good old days.
We have our own interrogation specialists.
Like who? The youngsters? Don't make me laugh. Those pussies would have to take a walk to Mars and back before they'd reach anything like the level of old-school specialists. Now, if we crack that nut, we're sure to find plenty of colonels. What do you think?
I agree. Rostovtsev is our only link. He's the only one we managed to identify, anyway.
Well, such things don't happen randomly. How about that little wetback?
Are you referring to his acquaintance in the game?
Heaven forbid. I am referring to the lazy gardener who lifts your wife's skirt every Friday.
Eric, you ass! Why do you even have to ask such questions? I know you are no idiot.
We keep an eye on him, both in the game and IRL. So far, he looks like yet another nobody. Rostovtsev hardly contacts him at all, and all they talk about are game-related issues. He doesn't get him involved in anything else. He's like his personal accountant. All they talk about is money. We have monitored all his contacts in the game, and it's the same scenario everywhere.
But the Mexican is still afraid of something.
He doesn't know about anything that matters. He doesn't know anything at all. But the hints he gets are enough for him to jump at every shadow.
And yet he sticks by Rostovstev.
Rostovstev is a celebrity. Everyone would be interested, and he's no fool either, so he should have noticed all the interest. There were a few provocations from our part, so that explains the fear.
You cannot eavesdrop on what they say within the game. However, there are no substantial problems with the forum. Our analysts have gone through every single word there. They didn't find anything of substance, just like everywhere else.
The Mexican is a red herring they use to divert our attention elsewhere. Rostovstev is in no need of funds, whereas this guy finances all kinds of market deals, buys and sells items, and controls auction lots. We have to get to the bottom of it all. Given that we cannot spare that much manpower, what this amounts to is us wasting precious time.
What about the journalist and his contact?
We have established the contact's identity. They and the journalist will be taken care of very shortly.
Any problems?
None that we foresee.
I'll tell you one thing, Eric. I have lived a long time, but this is the first time someone's managed to keep unnerving this poor old man for such a long time, being so driven about it, and yet making no demands at all. They make even fewer noises than a cat that's shat in your slippers. They piss in every corner on the sly, yet keep mum. What's the point? I don't get it.
And when I fail to get something, it's never a good sign. Now tell me one thing. If you'd found Rostovstev in that hospital, would he have been dead already?
Coleman nodded.
Sure, you decisive youngsters are fond of simple solutions above all. How about the fact that the version of Rostovstev that lives in our servers will hang around? He keeps throwing spanners in the works, and he'll surely be pissed off about the way you treated his precious body.
I still find it uncomfortable to discuss the separation of the body from the soul, but it isn't exactly the soul that we're talking about in this case. As a last resort, we can shut down the game servers, and Rostovstev will disappear forever.
Cut off the juice for Second World? You must be off your rocker completely.
Well, I did say it was a last resort.
With a last resort like this, you should run home, drink a bottle of whiskey, shit yourself, and blow your brains out on your toilet. Damn these wise guys. Tell me one thing. Can you kill Rostovstev in the game?
No problem at all. As many times as we have to. 100, 200, 1,000, that won't matter. All the characters are, unfortunately, immortal. He doesn't care about level losses at all. It looks like he still plays as a noob, without doing any serious leveling up. He doesn't care one whit about dying.
In earlier games, admins could interfere in the gaming process. What a time. If anyone tries to play silly buggers, you press a button and ban him forever. No more Mr. Wise Guy.
It's a pity Second World offers no such option.
Nor should it. Have you ever seen anyone banned from the real world? Neither have I. Second World copies the real world, so there should be nothing of that sort there.
Still, it's a pity we have no way of dealing with players left.
Yeah, sure. All young idiots think they know best. I wonder what dim youngsters like you would do without old ruins such as yours truly. How can anyone rely on you at all? Back in my time, they wouldn't even let the likes of you work as janitors. Where is this world headed, I wonder?
Do you mean that I do mean that, Eric?
I mean exactly that.
You mean there's a way?
Do you think I wouldn't prepare a special option for cases spinning out of control such as this one, with my foresight? Oh, Eric,
You disappoint me. But that's supposed to be impossible. Stick by me, Eric, and you'll learn just how much can be possible. So what about this method? It's pretty cunning. If I really want some player to kick the bucket, they'll do just that, and they won't respawn. They'll disappear forever. Not just within the game. In real life, too, Eric. Trust me on that. All we need to do is find him. In real life, that would do too. But it would be enough if we could locate him within the game. A body with no mind in it is mere biological waste.
Chapter 3. Ross was running away. He was running as fast as he could, with no regard for anything, and without sparing himself, tearing through thorny bushes and tripping dangerously on numerous bumps. He would fall every now and again, but he would jump up immediately, so it hardly affected his speed. Had a chance observer happened upon him, they would be surprised by his behavior. No one was following Ross, but he kept running as if chased by all the horrors of the second world. Oddly enough, he was escaping two good-natured lummoxes that didn't pose any threat, but he could take no more of macho strongman or nail in the head. It wasn't just about their behavior. He never managed to solve the puzzle of how they had turned up or how they may relate to him, but he could have tolerated that much. However, their most recent hints that their extremely odd party would soon gain a new recruit were the final straw. Ross decided they could go and get stuffed with those mysterious ways of theirs. He had spent enough time with the couple and managed to study them well, but it didn't add to his understanding of their behavior. Sometimes they seemed like low-importance NPCs rather than actual players, the kind controlled by one of the low-power AIs. Any attempt to find out anything about their motivation was stonewalled completely. And it wasn't even a matter of them failing to understand. They either had no idea of what he was talking about, or completely ignored everything they deemed to be of little interest. Macho Strongman and Nail in the Head were playing a game of their own, and Ross's meaningful hints had no place in it. Well, that wasn't the kind of game he'd been willing to play. They could either be transparent and understandable, or play by themselves. So they were welcome to have all the fun they could without Ross now. The clear plains ended. Ross tore through the bushes and started running through the forest. Night vision was a racial advantage that came in very handy. He dodged every tree and every sharp twig that could have cost him an eye and jumped over fallen pines. Pines. They were pines for sure. According to the map, pine woods marked the territory where the locked land hordes had been completely unknown very recently. Now the borderlands have been laid waste. The invading monsters managed to get to the heartland of the province, and they were held back by valiant efforts of all the defenders who had gathered to the rescue. Ross kept moving through fields and pine woods of this sort for about 2 days now. The approximate front line was drawn somewhere around those parts. A group of enthusiasts at the forum kept track of it. There were hordes of monsters fighting a whole bunch of players, having the time of their life, and the NPC troops of the Imperial Army. It was an epic 24/7 battle with no lunch breaks, and it was fought on a strip of land barely 2 miles wide. Ross already made several attempts to approach the fun zone, and he was forced to retreat each time, often rather hastily. It would be too dangerous, even for one of the strongest players. A noob like him would get swatted like a fly. He kept approaching the front line, trying to find a gap where there would be no fighting and which would not be on the map.
The situation on the battlefield changed too quickly, after all, and no one would keep track of such trifles in real time. And it looked as though he was in luck this time. According to the map, the pine wood that he was currently approaching was part of the battle zone, but he could hear no sounds of battle or see flashes of magic, and there were no piles of charred trees blocking his path. However, this didn't mean he could just saunter through without a care. Ross managed to get far enough away from the strange couple, and he doubted that either Macho Strongman or Nail in the Head had any leveled-up tracker stats. Their kind would be too bored with something like that, so chances were he would never see him again. Although you never know, anything might happen, given the sheer number of their oddities. For all he knew, they could emerge from behind the next line of trees, wave their hands in a friendly manner, smile idiotically, and ask him to roast some more meat. They were so fond of it, they could consume any amount, after all. He tried to step quietly, stopping every now and then to listen and to take a good look around. Everything was quiet, with no one to be seen anywhere, but it didn't feel promising at all. The forest is never completely silent at night. It should be alive in its own way, bats fluttering hither and thither, owls tuit-tuing, other night birds chirping, small animals rustling through the fallen pine needles, and hungry foxes trying to pick a hare's scent. But there was nothing of the sort going on. Everything seemed dead for miles around, and that never happens without a reason. The forest was frightened, and Ross didn't have an inkling of what may have frightened it. However, he strongly suspected this was due to the fact that the invisible border between the two warring factions lay across this woodland. Could this be the time for him to summon a pet? Ross got some soul crystals of a suitable level from the monsters killed by Macho Strongman and Nail in the Head. However, the problem was that although a pet would be useful in battle, moving noiselessly through a forest at night might not be its forte. Ross weighed all the pros and cons of both options and decided to skip the summoning. Silence and a good disguise were more important to him. The most recent monsters he sighted were of level 152 and went around in twos or threes. He also saw the kind whose parameters could not be read from a distance. That meant they were even more dangerous. A low-level pet would be a bad bet in a fight with high-level opponents. All it might do is help Ross live a few seconds longer. Not much point in that. But what was that sound? He could hear some noise from the direction he was heading in. It stayed more or less the same, which was suspicious. On the other hand, nothing to be afraid of. There was a river nearby. It had even been marked on the battle map. However, Ross was moving blindly. His own topographical data about this area were non-existent. So he was in luck. He could use the river as a landmark. If the game forum could be believed, Ross would be safe once he managed to cross it. If the sense that the hordes managed to reach that far. There were a few recorded attempts, but those efforts were most likely thwarted, which presented a much greater problem. Why would that be? Well, fighting back an invasion like that was no mean feat. Therefore, there were players on the other bank capable of dispatching the monsters from the wild hordes. Ross came across some of the mobs from the invading army, and all of them were high-level fighters. He could have fought a duel with one of those if he had still had any of his earlier pets at his disposal, but any attempt he would make now would be doomed. So the players across the river were just as strong, or perhaps much stronger. It wouldn't make much of a difference to Ross. He wouldn't be able to challenge them either way. Ross's best bet would be to find a squad of Imperial soldiers. His name was as white as driven snow. His reputation was more positive than most players ever manage, and if he opened his stats to the public, there would be many titles there to earn the respect of any NPC. In the worst-case scenario, they would just let him pass without laying a finger on him. In the best-case scenario, they could also provide protection and transportation. He had already wasted too much time roaming dangerous steppes and forests on his own. Things would get much hairier if there were squads of fellow players on the other bank. Some of the higher-level ones let this fact go to their head, especially if they don't manage to achieve much IRL. One of those would find it perfectly normal to waste a strange noob with a single hit, and then even brag about this brave deed to their peers. Alternatively, they might hit whoever they hear rustling in the bushes with high-level magic. They were fighting a war, after all, and every war is rife with mistakes. And the death of a lowly noob wouldn't even classify as a mistake. Even the red color of the killer's name would soon get washed away. Victories over high-level opponents facilitated that process, and there were plenty of those among the wild hordes. Those who like war worship death in any shape or form that it takes. Many of them try to waste no opportunity to please the Grim Reaper. Ross had never been afraid of dying inside the game, but right now he tried to avoid it at any cost. Those were the conditions of the quest that he had agreed to take. If he died, he would find himself back at the mine and be forced to start over once again. It would be the same old tedium of steppes and forests and the same fruitless attempts to find a safe way through the front line. It would also cost him lots of time. And he also had to bear in mind that the NPCs that had given him the quest might charge other players with the same mission. In that case, only one of the parties would be able to complete it. Everybody else would have to eat dust. And dust never made it to the list of Ross's favorite dishes. Even though he had enough achievements to make 100 average players happy, that was no reason to decline new opportunities. Too many of his plans depended on his success in the game. As a matter of fact, all of his plans were related to the game in one way or another now. That was the only life he had right now. In the meantime, the sound of the river kept getting louder. The forest started to thin out. He saw a line of bushes with many gaps in it right in front, with many felled trees strewn all across the ground. They had broken branches, and many of them looked singed. There was a sharp smell of pine resin and acrid smoke in the air, and what was that thing among the trees? Ross saw a skeleton of an enormous creature, something resembling a stegosaurus with enormous spikes on its spine and fangs the size of large logs plunged into the ground. He had no idea of what kind of creature it may have been or the level it may have had, but it had clearly been a boss once, and a strong one at that. It was enough to see the damage done to the terrain to realize as much. The victors must have gotten away with their loot, but monsters of this sort never disappeared quickly. They were important characters, and so their carcasses had to decompose, even if the decomposition followed the game's laws. A few days later, there would be nothing here but fangs, and a week later, the only reminder of the battle will be the tree trunks scattered across the clearing. Ross could see another clearing on the left. It was much smaller, and there were no giant skeletons anywhere in sight, but all the trees around it were well charred. It looked as though a whole squad got hit by a mass spell. This was indeed the front line. Ross approached the bushes sneakily enough for a wild cat to applaud him. His progress was slow. He moved forward a fraction of an inch at a time, trying to hold his breath and even refraining from blinking. He peered over the bushes cautiously, without touching so much as a single leaf. There were a few feet of river meadow right beyond the bushes, followed by a hairpin bight. The water lapped at the shattered logs of what once had been a water mill. The building itself was nothing but a char, with a wooden shed miraculously intact standing nearby. But even the shed suffered from the warfare. Its roof was badly damaged. There was nothing and no one in sight. The only sound that broke the silence was the monotonous babbling of the water seeping through the blockage. Ross still didn't quite trust the silence. There was a battle here indeed, and possibly more than one, but the in-game environment recovered quickly from all kinds of damage. If the animals are still in hiding, he might have reasons to be worried as well. Ross checked one of the sides, and then the other. He heard a faint rumble of thunder in a distance, and saw a faraway flash of lightning lighting up half the sky. Was it someone fighting the Horde, or just a thunderhead headed this way? The latter was more likely, for the flash was somewhere in the north, and what lay that way were peaceful lands behind the lines. Ross thought he might as well wait it out until the storm hits. It would be to his advantage right now. The river might be nothing much, but it formed a large open space together with the adjacent meadows. His disguise skill may have been good, but not good enough to hoodwink high-level opponents. He'd likely be spotted by observers as soon as he'd leave his shelter. Anything could happen after that, and it would no longer depend on him. If he got lucky, the players he'd run into would not be the kind that attack first and think later, or the aggressive sort that would waste no opportunity to demonstrate their superiority at the expense of a mere noob. However, it would be stupid to count on nothing but luck. The game offered many opportunities and aspects of disguise. It could be assisted or hindered by a wide variety of random and naturally occurring natural factors. The light and the dark times of the day were among the naturally occurring ones. It was logical that the nighttime offered many more opportunities for concealment. The player would have to be much closer to be discovered. Fog, snow, and driving rain had the same effect. Therefore, Ross didn't mind getting wet to the bone if that gave him a better chance of getting across the open space. It made no sense to look left or right in hopes of finding a better place. This borderland was extremely dangerous. The fact he had managed to get this far did not guarantee that he wouldn't run into a bunch of bored idiots eager to kill someone just for kicks in a few hundred feet. He regretted not having chosen a class specializing in invisibility back in the day. Rogues and assassins could shed invisibility at the distance of just one pace from another player, only to be noticed by one the moment a poisoned blade would be driven into their back. They were the best mage killers out there. And Ross was technically a mage. He really wished he would run into no such invisible players anywhere. They had class skills that amplified their perception considerably, and it would be a great challenge to stay hidden from their sight. Some of them could see you through a thick layer of shrubs. X-ray eyes, if anyone ever had one. The lightning was flashing closer and closer, and the thunder was getting louder. He felt a gust of fresh breeze, and then another one, stronger this time. Finally, he heard the heavy, monotonous patter of heavy droplets hitting the earth and the foliage. The wall of trees he could see across the river became blurred behind the veil of the downpour, and the water in the river started to make gurgling sounds as the raindrops kept hitting it. Then Ross was soaked in an instant. The rain was so hard, he was nearly swept off his feet. In weather like this, you'd be hard-pressed to see the fingers on your hand if you thrust it forward. That was precisely what he needed. He had to get going at once. Such downpours are known to end as suddenly as they begin. This one was unlikely to be an exception. No one can get that lucky. He couldn't move fast, since the downpour made it hard to see any landmarks. There was so much water, Ross didn't even notice the moment he reached the river. He had thought it to be yet another puddle, and was surprised when he found himself waist-deep. The river wasn't that wide, but it was deep enough, and the current was strong. Ross got caught in it, but he didn't get too far downstream. He grabbed onto a log. He knew where he was now, the remnants of the dam next to the destroyed watermill that he had seen earlier. It was an extremely uncomfortable crossing. He slipped on wet clay a few times, trying to crawl up the bank. It may not have been that high, but it was pretty steep. He only managed to crawl up once he realized he could use the logs for support. You are cold. The character's speed and vigor stats have been reduced. Find a way to warm yourself up. The good news was that only two of his stats became reduced so far. That was just the first stage of the in-game hypothermia. It was bound to get worse eventually. The rain wasn't exactly warm, and the water in the river must have come from some glacier, so there was nothing to be surprised about. Fortunately, he felt none of the physical discomfort that he would have been certain to feel IRL. He wouldn't die from the chill anyway, so he could bear with the related setbacks. The worst thing he could do would be lighting a fire in a place like this. That would be tantamount to sending everyone in the area the message that a completely brainless player had come into the area with the intention to run into some trouble. He could get dry after the rain. The mud that he was covered in would disappear as well. The game had many advantages over real life. Even the dirtiest miners who'd spent 20 hours in the damp bowels of a coal mine can clean up without much trouble in no time at all, even without having to use a shower. The shed with the fallen-in roof should be somewhere in front of him. That might be the only structure left intact for miles around. Someone less bright could have tried to use it to warm up, but Ross was nowhere near as simple as that. If the idea had occurred to him, it may also have occurred to anyone else. Risky encounters were the last thing he needed right now. Thus, he'd have to make a short detour and then fade into the woods. And he'd better hurry. The downpour was ceasing rapidly, which meant better visibility. Another step, followed by yet another. He saw a movement in the deep shadows next to the wall of the shed with his peripheral vision. He fell face down, getting even filthier from the dirt and the soot left from the burned-down watermill, without even thinking. Thud. He knew the sound of a bow shot well enough. The arrow buried itself in the mud right before his nose. Only the idiosyncratically fletched rear part stuck out. If the arrow was of regular length, it must have been shot by a high-level archer with a great deal of strength. Anyone else could but hope vainly for achieving something like this. If Ross got hit, the arrow would go right through muscle and bone. Even if such a wound didn't kill him at once, he'd have so many critical hits that he wouldn't manage to fight back or make a successful escape. He just wasn't strong enough. Archers were the game's main DPS class. They're the characters capable of dealing enough damage per single attack that even a strong opponent can become a cripple. The only thing that saves Second World from being dominated by this class is that arrows are subject to all the laws of ballistics. This means they don't fly in a straight line. Their trajectory is affected by such factors as wind, raindrops, drag, and gravity. Mages can exploit those vulnerabilities to fight off archer attacks with a certain degree of success, but that only happens when the attack wasn't unexpected. If a master archer ambushes you, your chances are, as a rule, pretty slim. The archer who had tried to attack Ross missed his chance of a certain kill. He missed. Ross was warned now, but that wasn't much of a solace. His opponent was definitely high level. You could tell as much merely by observing how deep the arrow had gone. It was certainly someone who knew all the pros and cons of their weapon. He might not get as lucky the next time, and there might be a third or a fourth attempt, and so on. He had to jump up, make a sudden dash in one direction and then another at a 180-degree angle. He had to make his movements unpredictable. After all, an arrow took a certain time to reach its target, and there was always a certain delay you could use to escape fletched death. Thud, another miss. The arrow got lost in the woods, piercing leaves and branches. Ross thought he should follow suit. He'd have some sort of advantage in the thick of the undergrowth. No archer can shoot through shrubs. They need to see their quarry. Unlike mages, those can hit a whole area with an expensive spell, destroying the guilty and the innocent alike. He fainted, as if he was trying to find shelter behind the nearest tree, and then dashed forward, only to strafe right in a second. The third arrow thudded through the bushes, making a cloud of powdered greenery rise up right in front of Ross's nose. That was good enough, and likely to get easier shortly. "Hey, noobster!" he heard a self-assured voice speak mockingly from behind his back. "You should never try to dodge an archer, or you'll be real tired by the time you're killed." That was hardly the encounter he would have wished for. The bastard tried to kill him without so much as trying to engage him in conversation first. He must be really bored and wet in that shed. Or maybe not. Judging by the laughter, there was a whole company of players whose idea of fun was to shoot a waylaid noob in the area. He might as well make them run for it. Ross might be cold, but his speed, as well as a few other stats, were at high enough levels. He resembled Macho Strongman and Nail in the Head in that respect. His stat point distribution was just as weird. But the sheer amount of those points exceeded what the two of them had put together. The Great Korean Random Number Generator spread bonuses around in any way it could, and the only points Ross could diligently invest into the skills required for a successful dark mage were those earned by sweat and toil. His heroic skill of resetting the accumulated points was also a huge boon. The Great Korean Random Number Generator is a concept that has got little to do with real life, yet plays a very important part in a variety of games. The name and other details identify it as a phenomenon dating back to the epoch when the gaming market was dominated by Korean MMORPGs. What it was all about was that in-game events whose probability was less than 100% could never be predicted. Their game is also subject to very low-probability chains of coincidence. For example, if the basic chance of getting a specific object from a slain monster is 10%, this doesn't yet guarantee that one would get what one wanted after killing 10. One could actually kill 100 and receive nothing, while another player could get 3 such objects after killing 3 monsters. The Great Korean Random Number Generator is known to behave much more egregiously by bringing about those very chains of events that seem so unlikely. To take the same example further, a player can get the desired object 10 times after killing just 10 monsters, whereas another player can spend hours vanquishing dozens and even hundreds of the same kind of monsters without getting anything at all. This doesn't happen often, but any case suffices to fire up the player's indignation. He had a pretty decent agility stat, which allowed him to dodge arrows and melee weapons, and high speed, which meant he could run fast. Apart from that, his vigor was leveled up well enough, which meant he wouldn't succumb to weariness too soon. And even if they managed to hit Ross, he had good stamina, which gave him extra HP and defense, which lowered the damage received, amplified by his armor and the very same stamina. On the other hand, high-level archers could also hit you with magic. Not all of them, though, and their success largely depended on their weapon. They had to put a special spell on their arrows before the shot. All of this must have affected the current situation, which let Ross notice the motion just before his body was about to be run through. Someone behind him started whooping gleefully. Those morons seemed to have a very vague idea of who they'd run into. They most likely thought that with levels like theirs, they could find any pesky noob in any forest. The plan must have been to catch up with him, surround him, and kill him without breaking a sweat. They were likely to mock him in a variety of ways before that. "Guess what?" thought Ross. "You're no match for me, and you can suck it." They'd never manage to catch up with him. He'd run a while, get warmer, and then show them how fast he really could go. Then Ross stopped suddenly, looking at the vista that had just opened before him with chagrin. Now he understood why they'd been whooping. He had nowhere to run. Technically, every direction was open and no one was holding him down, but the terrain changed in a most unpleasant manner. What he faced was an enormous area of woodland that had been burned to the ground. Most trees had been felled, and the few that remained were charred stumps without any branches. The worst thing was the rocky mass running parallel to the river that he could see in the distance. It was a sheer face of solid rock, some 45 feet high. Ross was agile enough to climb it, but that would take time. Meanwhile, those whooping bastards would come out of the wood and make a pincushion out of his exposed body while he climbed the rock. That meant his first attempt to reach the capital could be written off as a failure. He might close his eyes and relax, or attack the swines that seemed to be having such fun at his expense with all guns blazing, but the result would be the same. Ross would very soon end up at his latest respawn point, facing a very displeased Agithric. The latter would call him brainless meat or something of that sort, and then he could start again. That sucked. So much time lost.
"Hey! What the hell is that?" he heard a voice behind him cry out, frightened and indignant at the same time. "Argh! Guys!" Argh!
The voice got cut off. Then another voice cried out,
"They killed Butch! The bastards! Who could it be now? How could this noob have offed Butch? How is that even possible? No idea. There's some archer here. Damn! What's the matter? What is it?"
Two voices cried out at once. Another voice answered.
"Le Mans has bought it too. An archer again? That's right. Two arrows, one in his eye and another in his ear. What a bastard! Everyone, fall back toward me. Let's keep together. We should control all the approaches. This swine killed the mage and the healer. We cannot revive them now."
Well now, it seemed as though Ross had unexpectedly run into an ally. Not too shabby an ally, either. An intelligent one, too. The player seemed to know what they were doing. Namely, they managed to stay unnoticed, study the disposition, and take out the most important characters, the healer and the mage. They were the only ones capable of casting resurrection spells, which cost a lot of mana. Therefore, these two would invariably head for their respawn points. The only chance they might have would be if one of the remaining players used a resurrection scroll in time, but those are very expensive and hard to come by, so very few players had such scrolls on them, and even the ones that did would normally only take them along on the most important campaigns, when the loss of even a single player could mean defeat for the entire party. If Ross was right, and there were three opponents still left, he wasn't in that good a position. They had no support and couldn't see the killer, so they were perfectly aware that no one could revive them if an arrow gave them a fatal wound. On the other hand, the easiest classes for an archer to dispatch have been taken care of, the magical ones. Those were notoriously vulnerable to physical attacks. Dispatching the rest would be a little more difficult. Also, he had to be certain who was whose ally at that point. The unknown archer didn't introduce him or herself to Ross, and definitely didn't make any friendly overtures. It might have easily been a completely nihilistic player killer aiming to kill everyone alive in the area. Someone like that could kill a weakling like Ross with a single arrow. The second one wouldn't be needed. What conclusions could he make? He should make no noises and try not to move. His only chance was to huddle up in the bushes and see how it all would play out. If he got lucky, they would forget about him, or he might find a way to escape successfully. Where was the invisible sniper hiding anyway? Thud! Another player cried out, "He got me! It's my legs!" Over there. That's where